Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's a busy political year in South Dakota as we look ahead to a new governor, a new representative in the U.S. House, and a new state attorney general and more. Today, we welcome leadership from the American Civil Liberties Union of South Dakota for a look at their work, particularly during an election year in South Dakota. Heather Smith is executive director of ACLU South Dakota. Heather is here with us at the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Welcome. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for having us.
Also with us in the studio, Libby Screen. She serves as policy director for ACLU South Dakota. Libby, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We usually hear your voice from Pierre.
Yes.
Is that how that works for you? How much time do you spend in Pierre during session?
Yeah, so during the legislative session, I'm in Pierre full-time. So that's about 3 months of the year that I live in Pierre, and then the rest of the time I'm here in Sioux Falls.
All right, let's talk a little bit about how you got into this work. Heather, what drew you to doing this? You've been with ACLU South Dakota 5 years?
Somewhere? For 5 years, yeah, okay. In South Dakota. Before that, I worked with the ACLU in Idaho, and then I was also an immigration attorney. And I think the real reason why I wanted to get into working with the ACLU in particular is because I think protecting civil rights and civil liberties under the Constitution is so critical to our democracy and how we interact with, the public.
Yeah. Libby, how'd you get into this line of work?
I've always been sort of an ACLU groupie. I love this organization. My first sort of interaction or awareness of it was in college when I was in journalism school and learning about sort of the pivotal First Amendment cases the ACLU had taken up, and the idea that sometimes the people or the causes we represent aren't necessarily the most popular, but they're critical and they're important to our democracy and they're guaranteed by the Constitution.
Right. I'm a First Amendment geek myself. I could listen to any podcast on the First Amendment. It's so interesting
to me.
Let's talk about some of the foundational principles, because for some people, they might only hear, if they're listening to public broadcasting, only hear about ACLU during session about a specific, bill. Heather, do you have sort of, an overarching, like, this is who we are and what we stand for kind of talking points? Or
we represent everyone's civil liberties and civil rights under the Constitution, and that is regardless of political belief, race, sex, creed, whatever. We will represent everyone's rights under the Constitution, whether that's federal or state.
And that's where you get to be unpopular sometimes, because some of those cases can be really complicated and hard to sort out. Is it different working in South Dakota, Libby, than another state? Every state has to be completely different.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's funny talking to colleagues across the country is that everyone thinks, well, my state is different. But I do think that there are things about South Dakota that make this work really important and are also, I think, a credit to the people of South Dakota. I think that as heated as some of these issues are, for the most part, people are able to have civil conversations. My experience in Pierre has definitely been one of strong disagreement with some people, but I have found that by and large, when you're having a conversation with someone, even if you disagree with them, that there is a base level of respect there. And I think that's a credit to us as a state.
I was looking later on in the show next hour, we were talking about the Supreme Court case with the cake baker in Colorado, and I was reading some of the coverage of that this morning to prepare, and one of the notions that kept coming up was this hostility, sort of the hostility with which the whole situation was dealt with, which made me think a little bit about just how we have the conversations about individual liberties matters deeply. Heather, what are your thoughts on just how we talk about it? Not just that we must talk about it, but how we talk about it makes a difference.
I think the emphasis on differences, I think, is probably more problematic. And if we can, to speak to what Libby had said, if we can find the commonality in terms of what our shared values are, or some of the things we have in common, then that's a better starting point than to highlight the differences between people, beliefs. In that case, there's a difference in religious beliefs. But we all know that there are a lot of similarities we have in terms of religion with the shared values of kindness and neighborliness.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about South Dakota right now, because as we look at an election year, we'll have a new governor, we'll have a new representative in the House of the U.S. House of Representatives, new state lawmakers, new attorney general, all sorts of things are happening. Let's start with the attorney general, because I think that's something we haven't talked much about on this show, so I want to make sure we get that in. Libby, tell me a little bit. This is a constitutional officer. How does the process work? Because the Republicans will pick their candidate in convention. Democrats will pick their candidate in convention. So it can kind of fly under the radar. But give us an overview of why that's such an important role.
Absolutely. I think sort of what you said is a good starting point, because the attorney general is a role that has flown under the radar and that people don't often think of first of mind when it comes to, you know, state elections and the powers that be in peer. But for us, what we really want people to recognize is that the attorney general is not just a lawyer who goes to court and then stays up all night writing briefs, right? The attorney general is a politician, and the attorney general's office is a political office. And I think for far too long, we haven't been treating it as such, and we haven't paid as much attention to the vast powers that the attorney general has, and that the public has not engaged with the attorney general in the way they do with, you know, federal representatives, the governor, et cetera. So I think we want to raise awareness of what that role is and to show people that they can have influence on the way the attorney general operates. You know, our sort of thesis is the idea that the attorney general sets the culture of incarceration and prosecution in our state, right? And right now I feel that we are at a pivotal moment going forward in what our criminal justice system is going to look like for the next few decades. And whoever wins this election and gets into that position will have enormous influence over that.
So what kind of question should we be asking, Heather, at this point? What kind of question should citizens want to know about who this person is and some of their big, you know, experience matters, obviously, in this case particularly, but also philosophy matters?
I think we're asking people to think really hard about what our culture of incarceration is in South Dakota, and thinking about who needs to be behind bars and who could be diverted into mental health treatment or diversion programs, whether the charges match the sentences, I think is a concern to South Dakotans. And then I also think maybe at the forefront, we should be thinking a lot about the racial disparities in arrest, charging, sentencing, and other areas, and how that impacts the lives of Native Americans here in South Dakota, who make up a significant number of the population, but then also make up a significant population in jail and prison.
And Libby, that issue there is something that it seems so many state leaders, Pennington County, you know, Sheriff's Department has been on this program, Carl Jagaris from Rapid City Police Department, talking about an awareness of this and just efforts to move that in a more positive direction. How fast is fast enough for criminal justice reform? Just the stuff that everybody can agree on.
Yeah, I think it's not as fast as we would like it, but I also recognize that when we're talking about criminal justice and the system of incarceration and the drivers of crime, these are really complicated issues, right? And it takes a long time to bring in all the stakeholders we need to be talking to and to get a roadmap and policies on a way forward. You know, a lot of times we hear law enforcement talk about things, we hear the attorney general talking about things, and prosecutors, but there are a lot more people who need to be part of that conversation. You need civil rights advocates, you need medical professionals, you need the folks who are in the trenches treating people through drug courts. It needs to be a more holistic approach. And one of those critical populations is the actual communities that experience crime, right? Those are the groups that have the most at stake here, because they're the ones that are being impacted by this the most. And what do those populations want to see? How is incarceration affecting them? So I think we're in a good place as a starting point, and I want it to move faster, but I also recognize the fact that this stuff takes time, and any new changes forward will take a lot of time and effort.
Candidates for attorney general chosen by the parties at the conventions. So it's not something that Republican voters went to the primary on Tuesday and cast a ballot for, which means we don't know very much about that. We wouldn't necessarily know very much about the candidates. And do we have influence? Who do you call at this point to say, how do you find out in anything? Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, right now, I think you're right that we're kind of in a big unknown. After the Democratic convention, after the Republican convention, we'll know who the top two people are. But right now we've got five candidates within the two parties that are vying for that spot, which I think is exciting, because that's a lot of people. But you're right that, you know, their pitches right now when they're campaigning is really to the delegates within each of the parties. The delegates on both sides are the ones who choose that candidate, which is a little more of an opaque process. So for folks out there who know delegates to their county party conventions, they should certainly be having those conversations. But I don't know that there's a good way for the general public to exert influence at sort of the primary stage.
Right. So Heather, it speaks to just political involvement in general, saying like, if you're a Republican, you should maybe know what your party is up to in your county and area. Go to some of those events. If you're a Democrat, same thing. Meet up with others in your party and start talking about being connected. How important, Heather, do you think it is just for people to be engaged at that level and really paying attention?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to forget about a lot of political races. And in particular, I think the attorney general's race is a race that we haven't typically considered a political race. And so that's part of our thinking behind launching a campaign, is that we really want to see the attorney general get smart on criminal justice reform and think about options for reforming the criminal justice system that are consistent with what South Dakotans would want.
It's not just about, I think some people would think, well, the attorney general just enforces the law at this point, so it's beyond his or her scope. But during session, Libby, you see the attorney general working with people to sponsor legislation and stuff. So that's where this sort of overall philosophy and it comes into it. It's not about the current law. It's the fact that they might be talking with South Dakota Supreme Court Chief Justice and the new governor about what needs to happen next.
Absolutely. It's all of it. You know, I've been lobbying in Pierce since the 2015 session, and I think even I was surprised to see how influential and how involved the attorney general and his office has been in legislation. I mean, they come in and they testify. Sometimes it's the attorney general himself. Sometimes it's people in his office, and they support legislation and they oppose legislation. And that legislation really impacts our system significantly. One of the bills that we were very interested in this past session was a bill that would have reduced ingestion, having drugs in your system, from a felony to a misdemeanor. The Legislative Research Council looked at that and did sort of the cost estimate and found that we would be saving millions of dollars as a state if we made that one simple move. But the Attorney General's office came in and had a very tough on crime sort of war on drugs era mentality and asked the legislature not to pass that law, and they agreed and they did not pass it. And I think that, you know, on the back end, people think, oh, well, why wouldn't South Dakota do that? Or why don't we have better drug laws or a more holistic view of the system? You know, that is one of the main reasons. And so I hope that people become aware of that and do get more involved in recognizing that they can make asks of the attorney general as an elected official and that they should be doing that.
Let's talk about some of the other races and sort of how you approach. And I'm wondering, Heather, from a big picture standpoint during an election year, how do you look at some of the candidates and sort of dig into what you think are key issues for civil liberties for South Dakotans?
Mm-hmm. Well, the ACLU doesn't support or endorse any of the candidates. So we're looking at candidates purely from an issue platform perspective. And when we look at candidates in terms of what they're going to do for the community to keep it safe in terms of criminal justice reform or any of the other issues, is really, really digging in to think about how they're going to impact South Dakotans directly and if there are any ways that they could tweak some of their suggestions or platform ideas to be more inclusive of what South Dakota really needs and wants.
Expand on that a little bit, Libby, with, you know, in the State House, are you looking at bills? Are you scanning every bill that comes through? Are you bringing bills? Like, what do you see your role in peer as?
Yeah, I make it a point to read every bill that is filed, though I will admit that on bills that right. don't have some apparent civil rights issue, I will skim those. And I sort of like to describe what I do in peer as triage, right? I'm reading all the bills, and then I'm picking out the ones that really stand out to me as either a grave threat to civil rights or civil liberties, or as something that could really push our state forward in terms of guaranteeing civil rights and civil liberties. We do, as a chapter, have the freedom to decide sort of what our priorities are, and those are criminal justice, reproductive rights, and LGBT rights. But every session, something comes up that is not within that framework that is so critical that we feel we have to take it on.
It's so when you say LGBT rights, I'm thinking the first thing I think a lot of people are thinking is that transgender bathroom bill that went through the State House recently. Governor Dugard vetoed it. both Marty Jackley and Kristi Noem said during their campaign they would have signed it. So where does the education process start, or the information process? Heather, is that something you reach out to the candidate and say, maybe you haven't thought about this, or do you call and say, what are your thoughts? How do you begin?
Yeah, I think there is so much issue education that needs to be done on that issue in particular. And in terms of these anti-trans bathroom bills, I think we all need to remember that what we're talking about is kids. We're talking about kids who are already in a difficult point of life. If you think about what it was like to be in high school or middle school playing sports, it's not the easiest time for people. And I think if we go back to South Dakota values and the values that a lot of these candidates expose, is that that we should be doing better for our kids, and we should be treating them a lot better than these anti-trans bathroom bills have in the past.
So Libby, I'm sure you had these conversations in Pierre. I know we had them on the show during that, where we talked to the supporters of the bill, and they would tell you, if they were here, we are thinking about kids, and they were thinking about privacy protection for kids who are cisgender and did not want to be exposed to transgender. That's how they saw that issue. When you have those conversations with people, how do you start with a conversation where that's where they're coming from?
Yeah, I think one of the things with any of these conversations is coming into it knowing that the people you're talking to have very sincerely held strong beliefs, and that you as well have very strong beliefs, and to acknowledge that, you know, we all have feelings about this issue, and maybe maybe you've never met a transgender person. Maybe this is something unfamiliar to you. That's okay. It's okay to start from a place of discomfort and to discuss these issues. And I think what's important is that we are discussing these issues, and perhaps even more important than my role in talking to legislators is to help legislators connect with the people who are directly affected by the bill. I think in the example of HB 1008, the anti-transgender bill, there was nothing more powerful than the students who are actually affected by this bill coming to Pierre to sit in front of their lawmakers and say, you know, I'm not a theoretical concept and I'm not a threat to anyone. I'm a person, I'm a student, and I just want to be treated fairly. And these bills and the discussions around them are hurting me and making me feel like I don't matter. That is infinitely more powerful than anything I could say. And I think part of my role and part of our role as the ACLU is to sort of bridge that gap and connect directly affected people with their legislators and the decision makers.
Are there other things that you saw, other issues in the primary race between Marty Jackley and Kristi Noem that you thought was particularly worth watching going forward into the general election?
Yeah, we've been very focused lately on criminal justice reform and good policy. And so we very much were paying attention to what the candidates had to say on that front. And, you know, of course, with Marty Jackley being our attorney general, we're fairly familiar with his position and where he's come from. I think hearing Kristi Noem talk about her views on the criminal justice system has been illuminating. And, you know, now that she is the candidate for governor, I think we're looking at that a little more closely just to familiarize ourselves with her positions. And I do think, you know, a credit to her is that she has put her positions on her website and talked about the things that are important to her within that context. And I think that's great. And I think that she has some ideas that are really worth considering.
How about Democratic candidate Billy Sutton? Has he been on his website and has he given you indications, you know, through his work in the State House and through his candidacy of where he'll fall on certain issues?
I think at least in the criminal on a lot of issues, just being in Pierre and watching him, I think we have a sense of his views on things. I would encourage him to elucidate more in his work going forward, his views on the criminal justice system, on mental health, on drug issues. I did take a peek at his website and Kristi Noem's website before we came here, and I didn't see anything on Billy Sutton's website that indicated his plan for criminal justice. And, you know, maybe that has to do with the fact that he didn't have a contested primary. But I hope going forward we will hear a lot more from him.
All right. Let's talk about the U.S. House race and some of the conversations that came out between Dusty Johnson and Neil Tapio and Chantel Krebs. Heather, what were you really watching during that time? Were there red flags or concerns or, you know, some encouraging things that you heard them really digging into from a topic standpoint?
Yeah, I think also to stay on the same topic of criminal justice reform, the successful candidate Dusty Johnson ended up talking about how our state and the federal government would really benefit from using drug court more frequently in federal court. And I think that is a really good sign of things to come in terms of him thinking more proactively about alternatives to incarceration and thinking holistically about chemical dependence treatment, mental health treatment,
right,
for offenders.
And you've got to have a lot of information from Democratic candidate Tim Bjorkman on criminal justice because of his history as a judge and some of the things he's really led with. Libby, thoughts on Bjorkman going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I do wish that, as along with Billy Sutton, I wish he had more information on his website. He does have a Law Review article that he had written about the South Dakota system and trauma that kids experience and how that affects them going forward that I printed off. It's about 55 pages. I didn't get a chance to read it this morning, but that's on my list to do. But I would love to hear more from him on that. And also just generally, you know, when candidates are running for office, I think there is sometimes a tendency to stick to the talking points, right? Right. And I think that's valuable. But at the same time, I want to dig into the nuance. I want to know, you know, not just your philosophy, though that is important, but what exactly you want to see and what exactly your idea of good policy is. So maybe that's a plea for changing the discussion a little bit or making it more informed.
Right. The people come to you? Do they come to you personally and say, I need help with an individual case? Is that part of what you do, Heather? We're kind of focusing on one aspect of what you do as ACLU of South Dakota. But that's another part where people give you a call and say, I have a problem.
Absolutely. And we've been talking a lot about the political nature of the ACLU, but it's new to us. But what we had been doing prior to this, and something we'll continue doing, is that we take legal intakes from people from anywhere in South Dakota, and we evaluate their cases on an individual basis to see whether or not there's something we can do to help them.
Give me an example, not necessarily a real life example, but give me a case study so people can put that in perspective of when they would call you.
Yeah, I mean, so the world of issues that we work on is very broad. Criminal justice, racial justice, a lot of discrimination related issues end up, you know, in front of us. And a lot of times these seminal cases that you hear in front of the Supreme Court came from someone who picked up the phone and called the ACLU and said, hey, I have a problem and we need to do something. Edie Windsor, who was the named plaintiff in the Windsor case that came in front of the Supreme Court and struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, she was a person who contacted the ACLU and said, hey, my spouse, I can't get access to my spouse's benefits. And from there, we ended up in front of the Supreme Court. So, you know, people call us for a lot of reasons. And a lot of times that's where the big change can come from.
This issue that the Supreme Court decided on recently about baking the cake and the baker who said, look, I'm not comfortable making this cake for a gay couple who wants to get married. There's issues of, well, what about if they'd asked for an anti-gay marriage cake? Would you have made that? And Supreme Court's decision deeply had religious beliefs, discrimination against married couples. In South Dakota, that might not be something, that situation might not be something that people deal with on a daily basis. So we're reading the news and we're trying to figure out, how do I think about this? Give us some suggestions for when a topic like that comes up, which is so much more than what the Supreme Court actually decided. What are some of the questions we should ask ourselves about how to look at civil liberties when they seem to conflict against each other?
Yeah, I think one of the things that is an important thing to keep in mind is the difference between beliefs and things that you believe to be true or principles that you hold up versus action. And is the belief leading to an action that harms another person? And if that action harms another person, then we've got a problem, right? Everyone has the right, and they should have the right, to believe what they want and to follow the religion or the beliefs that they hold dear. What none of us have a right to do is to harm another person. So when our actions are harming another person, I think that's when we have to take a second and say, okay, is this about belief or is this about conduct? And of course, those things are very intertwined and enmeshed, but I think it's a good starting point.
Conversation's a good starting point. Hopefully both of you will come back and talk to us again about individual topics in the future. Great to get to know you.
Yeah, same. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Libby Screen is Policy Director for ACLU South Dakota, and Heather Smith is Executive Director. They joined us today in the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls.